went on. The idea that I had lost my mother no longer existed. All I had to do was look at the palm of my hand, feel the breeze on my face or the earth under my feet, to remember that my mother is always with me, available at any time. When you lose a loved one, you suffer. But if you know how to look deeply, you have a chance to realize that his or her nature is truly the nature of no birth, no death. So this all sounds very lovely. But even though Thich Nhat Hanh is a very wise and sweet man, we're still supposed to challenge this. We're supposed to question and challenge all of the teachings. So on the one hand, you know, you can think like that and think about cells and genes and whatever and how, you know, my ancestors are here. And, you know, I mean, that can be a consoling thought. But in a way, these teachings are most powerful when, you know, we say, but wait a second. Yes, there's death. Yes, there's loss. What are you talking about? I mean, you know, in a visceral way, I think this reminds me of I can't remember where it's from, but in one of the koans, I think, where like this, a young monk, and he hears the Heart Sutra, like no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue. And he's like, I have a nose. Like, you know, we have to bring this a visceral reality that we experience together with these, you know, they can't just let them remain ideas. So really, what does this mean? What is really going on here? I mean, is this just a clever thought device? You know, just think of something pleasant and, you know, you'll feel better. And I think our gut tells us no, that there's something true here. What is going on really? What does it really mean to say, understand we cannot be destroyed? Obviously, this is a different sense of we or I. Because the I that I'm usually operating with a sense of sure feels like that can be destroyed. My body's going to be destroyed. What does it mean that I can't be destroyed? So that's where he gets into what, you know, people have been sharing some of, is his whole idea of manifestation versus creation. So the sense that, you know, when the conditions are right, something manifests, the flame, the cloud. And when the conditions change and it's not right anymore, then that thing is no longer there. But there's no, like, you know, where was the cloud before it became a cloud? Like, no, there's no thing that was created and then destroyed. It's just a shifting manifestation. So his example is, so like Adin mentioned a number of his metaphors, but he also had the radio waves. Like, there's radio waves all around us. We don't notice them at all. But then when there's a radio receiver, you know, now it manifests sound. So when the receiver is no longer there, does that mean the radio waves are no longer there, just because the situation is not right for them to manifest as sound? So another section that I thought was very pivotal. So it says, no coming, no going. For many of us, our greatest pain is caused by our notions of coming and going. We think that the person we loved came to us from somewhere and has now gone away somewhere. But our true nature is the nature of no going, no coming, no going. We have not come from anywhere, we shall not go anywhere. When the conditions are sufficient, we manifest. When the conditions are no longer sufficient, we no longer manifest. It does not mean that we do not exist. Like radio waves without a radio, we just do not manifest. Like, so not only do the notions of coming and going not express reality, neither do the notions of being and non-being. We hear these words in the Prajnaparamita Sutra, the Heart Sutra. Listen, Shariputra, all dharmas, all phenomena are marked by emptiness. They are neither produced nor destroyed, neither increasing nor decreasing. The meaning of emptiness here is very important. It means, first of all, to be empty of a separate self. Nothing has a separate self and nothing exists by itself. If we examine things carefully, we will see that all phenomena, including ourselves, are composites. We are made up of other parts. We are made up of mother and father, our grandmothers and grandfathers, our body, our feelings, our perceptions, our mental formations, the earth, the sun, and innumerable non-self elements. All these parts depend on causes and conditions. We see that all that has existed, exists, or will exist, is interconnected and interdependent. All that we see has only manifested because it is part of something else, of other conditions that make it possible to manifest. All phenomena are neither produced nor destroyed because they are in the constant process of manifesting it. Manifesting. So the waves are water. The waves are separate. If they imagine themselves as separate, there are big waves and there are long waves and there are grand waves and there are small, you know, but they're all water. From the point of view of water, none of that makes any sense. But of course, these images of, or metaphors or whatever, of clouds and water and flames, it's a lot easier to think of those things as, you know, just manifestations. There's nothing like, is the flame the same after a second or two? Kinda, not really. You know, who cares? But we care about ourselves. It's much more difficult to see ourselves as just manifesting for many reasons. I mean, we have kind of a discrete body, right? There's more clear edges to us. There's this, you know, event of being born and there's event of dying. And besides the fact that, you know, we have consciousness, we have self-interest, we have a self-agenda, we have a sense of ourselves. And of course, we imagine our loved ones as being similar. So seeing ourselves as, or other beings or other things in our lives that we really, really care about as like, well, it's a manifestation, is very challenging. And I mean, it takes practice. It takes a while for us to be able to cultivate that, the ability to relate to things in that way. So I wanted to briefly put us in breakout rooms and ask you to each person to just say one or two sentences about what do you think happens when we die? And I invite you to do this not because, you know, we're going to speculate.
Oh. Eight.
Hold on. I invite you to do that not because, you know, we're going to come to any good conclusions or anything, or because it's even a useful thing to think about, or I don't know. I mean, I would imagine for most of us that answer is going to be like, I don't know. But this is more about becoming conscious of what we do think, or what our, because, you know, our practice is really becoming aware of all aspects of ourselves. So we may, it's useful to realize what's our relationship to this? Is this something we kind of avoid thinking about, or is this something that we have a clear vision for, or whatever? So I'll just give you that exercise to just, and you know, don't judge one another. just throw it out there. It's like, I don't know. This is what I think happens when we die. And to just receive other people's offerings. So I will give you an invitation to your rooms.
Welcome, Don.
Hi.
Anybody want to go first?
I'll take a whack at it.
Whack on.
Do any of you know John Prine's music?
No.
He had a song about what happens after you die. And I think it was his dad that said, when you're dead, you're a dead peckerhead, meaning there is nothing after death, right? And in his song, he talks about how he believes that it's much more than that, and he's going to be reunited with his long-lost aunts and things like that. And it was just a wonderful song. And by the way, he died of corona. Mm-hmm. I love that guy. But as far as my beliefs go, I have no freaking idea. And I think Domio kind of touched on it a little bit, and that I haven't, I kind of avoid it because I can't quite grasp it. So. That's the short summary there.
Thank you. Well, I'll take a turn. I can't say it's something I think a lot about. I maybe think about it intermittently over the decades. Certainly, I went through a period of thinking more about death when my dad died at the early age of 59. Long time ago. My mom is 92 and healthy, but you know, I think as she ages, I think a little bit more about it. I can relate to an aspect of Domia's question when she said, maybe you think you really don't know, and that's my bottom line on it. I don't presume to know. I have sort of room for the possibility that we could turn into something like Domia's radio wave that has some kind of existence, but without the right receiver, you wouldn't know of the, no one else might know of the existence. That's kind of a fun metaphor. But I guess my gut feeling about it is that we pass into molecules and no longer cease to have any self-awareness, that our molecules mix again, and there is no kind of awareness per se.
I'll go. Am I being heard? Okay. So a few things. One is when I was a long, long time ago, and my father died, and I was with him when he died, and I remember so distinctly seeing his body and saying to myself, that's not my father. That's not him. And the next thought was, that body just housed him while he was here. So I didn't even really cry in that moment, because that I just felt like whatever was him, whatever made what I called my father, was somewhere else. It wasn't that body. that body was just a vehicle, a conveyance for him. And subsequently, I've had more vivid experiences with quote unquote my father, more deeply intimate sometimes than in when he was in that body. And from my own experience, I had times when I was an infant and I crossed over, I guess. And I remember interacting with these three beings, and the sense of love that was with them was so indescribable. And I agreed to come back, but I raged. I had tremendous resistance once I was back in my body. And then again, about, I think it's maybe 10 years ago, something had happened and some people were trying to make sure that I stayed in my body. And I was having this conversation with myself and said, oh, is today I'm gonna die? Oh, that's okay. Oh, I like this. This is okay. I'm glad I'm gonna die today. This feels good, something like that. And then I'd say, I could hear their voices and I'd say, oh, maybe I shouldn't go out so far. And I'd come back in and I'd say, no, I'm gonna go. And so I'd wiffle waffle back and forth. But whatever it was that was disconnecting from my body was very grateful to be disconnected from the body. So I'll say that's about as much as, yeah, there's always a challenge to come back into the body for me. But I wish that I had known, had some spiritual teacher, confidant, or some Buddhist teacher, specifically when my father had died. I did meet someone about a year later who encouraged me to pray to him, and that was very valid and useful for me.
Well, I guess it's my turn. Thank you, Yashay. That's interesting. I really haven't had much thought about this. I've seen, it's like a light switch. 1 minute they're there, the next minute they're not. These are cases that have been instances when somebody dies suddenly, not due to a long illness. But in the case of my mom, she passed away after my dad had died in the night. And I always thought how lonely that must have been for him to die from a medical problem in the middle of the night. But I had no concept of what happens afterwards. I was intrigued for a while with the Tibetan Buddhist concept of a spirit that was, the way they presented it was sort of loose in the world, searching for a new host to occupy. And that has some attraction, but I'm not sure how much of that I really am with. Are you hearing me okay?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay, because Yeshe is still the focus, and I thought perhaps there was a problem with that. But okay. Anyway, the bottom line is that I really have no idea. I have some fantasies. I have no evidence other than just the philosophical notions that have been put forth. In my family's tradition, we don't do casket type burials. Everybody is cremated. So that goes against the teachings of Rome for sure, and most of the other societies that come out of the Desert Fathers tradition. So it's kind of interesting. It's actually dating back more to the Hindu cremations, and I don't know where this comes from. I really haven't looked into it, but European family all the way through, but it predates even most of what was in Europe. So that, I find that most interesting. But as far as what happens afterwards, really don't have an idea. Thanks.
I think that leaves me. I'll be brief. I actually have thought quite a bit about this. I studied gerontology in graduate school and took several courses on thanatology. It's always been an interest of mine. I don't know why. But have been with people. I think it's a real privilege to be with somebody when they die. I've had that experience a few times. But what happens, I have no clue. Really an open question for me. I don't have a Christian background, so the concept of heaven has never been something for me. It's always been more the nihilistic approach. But sort of what you were saying, Jeff, I'm really open to thinking that that's a very Western concept, and there are a lot of other people who don't think that. And I'm really open to that. I've studied quite a bit of the Tibetan tradition, the Bardos. I find that fascinating. So interested to read this book and see how it meshes. I feel like there's not a lot of discussion about death in the Zen tradition. There's a lot in the Tibetan tradition. So this is going to be an interesting little journey that we go through. And I could be wrong about that with the Zen tradition. That's just been my impression. So I guess we'll see.
Well, thanks, everybody. I'm glad Dumio invited us to do this. It's not often that I talk to people about what I think about such things and have the opportunity to hear all these comments. So thanks.
Yeah, agreed. I think this is going to be interesting.
Yeah. Here we go.
All right. We're going to get poofed away.
Ciao.
Bye.